QST, 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 this is Bruce, KK5DO, and it's once again time for another edition of the Houston AmSatNet. This net meets on Tuesdays to discuss topics related to satellites, balloons, and other amateur-related items. This is net number 1675, and it's 8 p.m. Central Time on Tuesday, September 8th, 2026, which in UTC time is Wednesday, September 29th. At 0100. Sorry, this net is only being heard on Echolink and our normal streaming service, as I cannot reach the repeater from my house. URLs for this evening's net are located at amsatnet.com. I just took a look, and for some reason it didn't post them at 6 p.m. like it was supposed to, so I'm not sure. So it'll get up there whenever it decides to get ready to do it. So let's go take a look at the AmSat news service. This is number 249 for September 6th, and we've got some interesting things in here. Of course, the AmSat board election voting deadline is approaching. September 15th is your last day to vote. So hopefully if you have someone that you'd like to see elected, you go and place your vote. And as Andy used to say, if you really want someone, vote for only that person. Otherwise, if you vote for the three or four like they say, you wind up diluting your candidate's vote. So take it as it is. So there are three seats on the board that are being filled this year. Three candidates receiving the highest number of votes will be elected to the board. The other two will become the first alternate and the second alternate. And we've got Rich Kopstein, KD2CQ, Mark Hammond, N8MH, Bruce Page, KK5DO, Paul Stetzer, N8HM, and Douglas Tabor, N6UA. So go cast your vote if you haven't. According to the data they have already, less than 10% of the eligible AmSat members have voted. So that means that you might make a, you know, wise decision and vote for your particular candidate. All right. ARIS, they've got some changes over on their leadership. They announced several leadership and operational appointments aimed at strengthening the organization's technical, educational, and administrative activities. Daryl Young, K4RGK, has been named ARIS USA Director of Operations, while Ryan Krzyzczyk, Deborah Lieber, KC3YWM, and Megan Tucker, KQ4MAM, are taking on new or expanded roles within ARIS. Young is a longtime ARIS USA technical mentor who has supported numerous direct telebridge amateur radio contacts between astronauts aboard the ISS and students on Earth. As Director of Operations, he will lead the ARIS technical mentors and oversee other operational activities associated with the organization's STEM contacts. Most recently, Young led the ARIS initiative that assembled a worldwide consortium of ground stations to track Artemis II during its journey around the moon. The AREX Artemis Ground Station Consortium successfully tracked the spacecraft and provided Doppler data to NASA during the mission. ARIS described the effort as an important first step toward expanding its operations beyond low Earth orbit and preparing for future amateur radio activities associated with lunar exploration. Ryan, and I'm not going to try his last name again, who previously served as ARIS USA Director of Operations, has moved into the newly created position of Chief Information Officer. He and his team will oversee ARIS websites and other back-end systems supporting the organization's information infrastructure. He has served as an ARIS USA technical mentor since 2013 and has additional experience with the American Radio Relay League, Navy Marine Corps Military Auxiliary Radio System, or MARS, and Army MARS. Deborah, KC3YWM, currently the ARIS USA Metrics Lead, will join the ARIS International Board as its secretary while continuing her metrics responsibilities. She began her professional career as an aerospace engineer at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center before becoming a high school mathematics teacher. Megan, KQ4MAM, has been named ARIS USA Logistics Manager and will coordinate the organization's growing participation in educational conferences, hamfests, and other public events. ARIS International, a cooperative effort involving amateur radio organizations and space agencies that uses amateur radio contacts with astronauts aboard the ISS to encourage student interest in science, technology, engineering, the arts, and mathematics. AMSAT is among the USA or U.S. sponsors of the ARIS program. Additional information about ARIS and its educational activities available at ARIS.org. So, July, August 26, or 2026 issue of the AMSAT Journal is now available. If you are a member, you can go peruse and take a peek at it. This particular issue does have all the field day results and my story in there. So, if you're an AMSAT member, certainly go take a quick peek. The Apogee View from AMSAT President Drew Glassbrenner, KO4MA, reports from a busy week on the road, including a day at the Huntsville Hamfest, 2 days spreading the AMSAT message at the small satellite conference in Salt Lake City, where the conversations range from launch providers to high schools, and included an introduction to the new president of AMSAT Canada. There's also educational relations update from Alan Johnston, KU2Y, and the CubeSat Sims feature in the September issue of QST, a preview of upcoming version 2.3 software release, and the CubeSat Sims loaner program for educators, along with a sidebar. Quick update on the Fox Plus, preview of the upcoming 2.3 software release. Along with a sidebar, quick update on Fox Plus A testing. There we go. AO7's 24-hour mode timer. What the AMSAT status reports reveal during continuous sunlight by Paul Stutzer, N8HM, mines nearly 1,500 AMSAT satellite status API reports from the summer's illumination season to ask a simple question of the 51-year-old satellite. How well is its onboard mode timer really behaving? Okay, then there's public STEM events and AMSAT's BuzzSat resources. AMSAT Ambassador Tom N5HYP shares his approach to engaging the non-ham public at Dallas's Moon Day, from CubeSat Sim demos and live SSTV to the new BuzzSat.com youth outreach materials with ready-to-use handouts for the ambassadors. And finally, yes, AMSAT Field Day 2026 results from me. You can see all that. You can see that Murphy visited a few sites. Murphy will continue to plague us. One of these days we'll figure out a way to get rid of him. And we'll take a quick break here for everything to reset. Okay. And the AMSAT Journal is published bi-monthly as a benefit of AMSAT membership. So if you're not a member, it might be a good time for you to join. If you are a member, we thank you for doing so. If you kind of like AMSAT stuff, there is an AMSAT round logo metal lunchbox that you can purchase over at Zazzle. And if the link works, we do have that link up at amsatnet.com. If it doesn't, you can always go to Zazzle.com/AMSAT and scroll down and look for the round logo metal lunchbox. I have no idea how much it costs, but it would be kind of cool. Okay, Satnogs rolls out major network and database updates. They did it late in August, including Satnogs network versions 1.128, 1.129, and 1.130, along with Satnogs database version 1.76. Network 1.128, released on August 27, introduced a substantial collection of changes affecting ground station operation, observation, scheduling, and the project's application programming interfaces. The release was followed in quick succession by 1.129 and 1.130 as developers addressed issues discovered following deployment. Satnogs is an open-source global network of satellite ground stations developed by Libre Space Foundation and supported by amateur radio operators and satellite enthusiasts around the world. One of the most significant changes in Network 1.128 is the first phase of a new multi-vetting system for observations. Previously, only one vetting result could be associated with the observation artifact, such as a waterfall, while the new system allows individual users to independently evaluate the same artifact. Future development is expected to extend vetting to additional observation products and could eventually allow automated systems or bots to participate in the process. The change is intended to provide more useful information about the confidence and quality of observations collected by the network. The update also removes an older observation status field from the API as part of the transition to the new vetting system. And let me make a pause here for the repeaters. There we go. Okay, KK5DO. Ground station status handling has also been redesigned. Instead of describing a station simply as online, offline, or testing, Satnogs now separately tracks whether a station is connected, whether it is available for scheduling, and whether it is undergoing testing. Station owners can therefore leave a station connected to the network while making it unavailable for observations, providing greater control over how stations participate in the network. Another new feature separates a station's minimum horizon from its minimum culmination elevation, allowing operators to independently specify the elevation at which tracking begins and ends, and the minimum elevation a pass must reach before it can be scheduled. These limits can also be configured as hard limits when dictated by antenna patterns, local obstructions, or other station constraints. Satnogs Database 1.76 introduces complementary changes to the way satellites and their transmitters are described. Satellite status values have changed from future, alive, dead, and re-entered to future, in orbit, launch failed, and re-entered, separating the orbital status of the spacecraft from whether its transmitters remain active. The database also gains experimental support for structured transmitter parameters, intended eventually to provide Satnogs network, client, and radio with enough information to create dynamic processing flow graphs. This could improve automatic decoding and support for a wider variety of satellite modes as the feature develops. The database update also lays groundwork for new launches feature intended to organize information about the satellites deployed on the individual launches. Satnogs currently relies heavily on community forum threads to coordinate reports following launches, but the new system is intended to provide a central view of deployment, reception, and identification status. New reception classifications include unknown, unverified, partially verified, and verified, with supporting evidence links available for received signals. This could be particularly useful during or following rideshare missions when observers around the world are attempting to identify numerous newly deployed spacecraft. Network 1.128 also adds support for transmitter parameters supported by SatNOGSDB, beginning the integration of these new database capabilities with observations. Deployment of new network software was not entirely trouble-free, prompting the rapid release of versions 1.129 and 1.130 following the 1.128. Developers worked through database migration and performance issues and made additional corrections as the updated software entered service. Beyond the major features, the releases include numerous user interface improvements, bug fixes, performance improvements, and enhancements for developers. Together, the network and database updates establish groundwork for improved observation verification, more flexible ground station, and better handling of the growing number of satellites and transmitters tracking through SatNOGS. It's a whole bunch of updates in that one, and we've got three links up there at amsatnet.com when it becomes posted. I tried to post it right before the net, and there's nothing to allow me to repost it once it got scheduled, so I don't know. I'll have to work on that. We've got our VUCC and DXCC updates for September up until, let's see, well, it says August 1st through September 1st. There we go. And we got DL5 GAC jumping to 1,967 grids. It sure must be nice to be where you've got QO100 available. And we've got down at the bottom here, HJ6MR getting his first VUCC with 100, IK2 TPX with 101, AD4ES with 113. So they're new members to the VUCC group. And I don't really know how many VUCC certificates have been issued. I think I got mine shortly after I was first licensed in 1993, it was certificate number 17. So it might be interesting to see how high a number they climb to on that. On the DXCC, YO3APJ jumped to 178, while UN3G is a new member to the DXCC community with 100. IZ2AMW with 103, and I1JQJ with 123. So welcome to them, to the DXCC community. And, of course, there are a few people that get awards every now and then, and I am the AMSAT Awards Manager. So here's one that Sean, KK7OVF, he earned the AMSAT Sexagesimal Award. So after you get the first 20 DXCC entities, states, or VE call areas, you add 40 to that. That brings you up to the 60. And then after the 60, you add 40 more and you get the century. So he's got number 204 on the sexagesimal. That didn't last long because the other day I issued 205. Plus, that person put in for the first time for his awards. So he got the first contact award, the 20, the 40, or I'm sorry, 20, 60, and then the 100, as well as the South Africa award, all in one bundle. Just took me a bunch of typing to enter all that stuff. So, you'll probably hear about that one next week. Sean's call sign may ring a bell for followers of the AMSAT satellite distance records. He has a record from CN85 in the Pacific Northwest on AO123. And let's see, that's 1,622 miles. So it doesn't say who he contacted, but he's on there. And then we've got Eric, KH6WI. He has Rover Award number 96. You know, you only need 25 points for that. He submitted something like 90-something points. So that was kind of a slam dunk. He was busy traveling around. Let's see. What did he do here? What did they put? He's described as adventurer and sailor. He completed worked all states via satellite from Hawaii in 2023, crediting the IO-117 Green Cube Digipeter. Yeah, that digital stuff. I'm still out on that. The rover community and more than a few midnight passes for making it possible. His travels continue to provide plenty of opportunities for portable satellite operating and grid activations. So if you'd like to get the rover award, get out there, leave your home grid, go to another grid. If you work an FM transponder, you get a point. If you work a linear transponder, you get 2 points. And if you do it digitally, you get 3 points. Then, if it's a different state, province, or DX entity than your own, you add a bonus point. And then, if you publicize it 24 hours or more in advance on social media and tag @AMSAT or #AMSAT, then you add another 5 points. Or you can even put on the AMSAT BB. You get another 5 points. And then after you're all done, if you post information afterwards and show some pictures of your setup, you get another 5 points. And of course, if you go maritime mobile, you start off with 10 points, which will help you reach the 25 really quick. And your endorsement certificate will have the stroke MM after your call sign. So everybody can participate. Fun thing to do. All right. I think I need to pause here. And KK5DO. There we go. In ARIS news, there were no contacts completed this week. Upcoming, nothing scheduled for this current week. So that was easy. And normal things written there. Now under the ambassador activities, of course, Clint, K6LCS, he always does all kinds of interesting things on working the satellites. And of course, he always says that no two of his presentations are ever the same. That's because he bashes somebody that's at the club that he may know or, know about. So when he did one for our club, of course, he had to say a few words about me, and that was fine. So that's what makes it a little bit different each time. Then we have, Greater Louisville. They've got a ham fest coming up September 12th. It's only a few days away. And let's see. The board, that's BORED, net, Micro Expo, NARRL Santa Barbara Section Convention. That's coming up October 3rd. Tucson Area Autumn Ham Fest, October 3rd. That's in Tucson. And then we've got, of course, the AMSAT Symposium coming up October 8th through the 11th. And then Southern Arizona has a Fall Ham Fest, November 14th, and that's in Marana, Arizona. So a bunch of ham fests out there that you can go partake in. They're always fun. I think the part I like the most is actually making all the eyeball QSOs. You may not see somebody for a year or two or three, and then you have a chance to catch up with them. NASA's Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope launched Sunday, August 30th, aboard a SpaceX Falcon Heavy rocket from Kennedy Space Center in Florida. The observatory is now beginning a three-month, roughly 1 million-mile journey to the Sun, Earth, L2, Lagrange Point, where it will conduct wide-field infrared surveys of the universe. Roman will investigate dark matter, dark energy, exoplanets, using 300-megapixel wide-field instrument and technology demonstration chronograph. And it's capable of directly imaging Jupiter-like planets. Controllers established contact with the spacecraft shortly after launch, and its solar arrays and lower instrument sunshade deployed successfully during the opening hours of the mission. Additional deployments, course corrections, and instrument checkouts will continue during the journey to L2, followed by several months of commissioning and calibration. NASA expects Roman's first images in early 2027, beginning a mission designed to survey the universe up to 1,000 times faster than the Hubble Space Telescope. Wow. Thanks to SciTech Daily for this story. You can go to their website and search for this and others if you so incline. NASA's Neil Gehrel Swift Observatory has resumed science observations after plans to boost the spacecraft into a higher orbit were abandoned. Swift's ultraviolet stroke optical telescope and X-ray telescope returned to operation on August 26, while its Burst Alert telescope is expected to resume observations in the coming weeks. Catalyst Space's Link spacecraft launched July 3rd with plans to rendezvous with, capture, and raise Swift's orbit, but attitude control problems prevented the boost attempt from proceeding. Link may still rendezvous with Swift to demonstrate proximity operations and other technologies for future satellite servicing missions. Launched in 2004 to study gamma ray bursts and other transient astronomical events, SWIFT has remained operational far beyond its original two-year prime mission. With increased atmospheric drag from recent solar activity accelerating the decay of SWIFT's low Earth orbit, NASA expects the observatory to re-enter Earth's atmosphere later this year. And that story comes from NASA. And let's see here. Okay, we'll take a quick look over here at who's joined us on Echolink. We've got N8, SGZ, David, N6UTC, Endoff, AG9P, Damien, W5BYT is linked in, and that's the Haslett Amateur Radio Club, KC5LWY, Andrew. So we thank you all for listening. And, of course, those that are listening over on DishNet, which I haven't logged in over there to look at the list of who's on, but thank you guys for providing the service and for listening. Europe's second Meteosat third-generation imager satellite, or MTGI-2, was launched aboard an Ariane 6 rocket from French Guiana on August 27. The satellite completes the first three spacecraft family of Europe's new Meteosat third-generation weather satellite system, Once commissioned in geostationary orbit, MTG-I2 will provide rapid weather imagery over Europe and northern Africa, with new observations available every 2.5 minutes. Its instruments include the flexible combined imager and lightning imager, allowing forecasters to follow rapidly developing storms and detect lightning during both day and night. Data from the satellite will also support wildfire monitoring, atmospheric pollution tracking, climate research, and improved early warnings for severe weather. MTG-I2 joins the first MTG imager launched in 2022 and the MTG Sounder launched last year, allowing the new generation of Meteosats satellites to begin operating at full capacity. And we thank ESA for that story. SpaceMD, a subsidiary of Redwire Corporation, has signed an agreement to fly commercial pharmaceutical research mission aboard SpaceX's new Starfall spacecraft in 2028. Starfall is an uncrewed re-entry vehicle designed to provide routine access to microgravity for research, manufacturing, and testing, with experiments and other payloads returned to Earth after their time in orbit. SpaceX conducted the first demonstration flight of Starfall in June of 2026, launching the spacecraft aboard a Falcon 9 rocket and testing technology intended for future return missions. SpaceMD plans to fly as many as 32 of its pharmaceutical and space laboratory, or PIL-BOX, systems on the 2028 mission, which the company says would make it the largest dedicated commercial microgravity research mission to date. The PIL-BOX systems allow researchers to crystallize pharmaceutical compounds in microgravity, where conditions can produce crystals useful in developing improved drug formulations and new therapies. Since November 2023, 54 PIL-BOX systems have flown to the ISS and have been used to crystallize 45 compounds, including insulin and molecules targeting cancer, cardiovascular disease, obesity, and diabetes. So we thank Redwire for that. And this issue of the AMSAT News Service was prepared by Mitch, AD0HJ. So we thank him for doing that. And we'll take a quick pause here for everything to reset. Okay, this is KK5DO. And let's see. KC5LWY, and he's got some meteor scatter info on Echolink here. So if you haven't done it, it's kind of neat. You just kind of, instead of pointing your satellite dishes at a satellite, you're pointing it at the meteor scatter. And your signal hits it and bounces wherever it bounces, and somebody may hear it. So it's kind of interesting. And that actually does it for me this week. What I last? 34 minutes? So I didn't go over to those other places, Space News and Space Daily and stuff, and look for anything today. I was kind of busy, so We're hoping Marty gets to feeling better with his back. He lifted too much and did something in the back, so he's been in a little pain and therapy, you know, so physical therapy. So hopefully he gets his station back on the air and gets to join in the fun here once again. So until next week, this is KK5DO 73.